welcome to the Better Spearfishing Podcast, where we talk all things spearfishing. If you want to improve your spearfishing and hear some wild stories, you've come to the right place.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Better Spearfishing Podcast. So today we have a very special guest, David Mulhellan, who is a, I guess you'd call him a free diving guru or master or champion record holder, you know, choose the thing. But anyway, welcome, David.
Hi, Nick. Thanks for having me on the show.
Yeah, no, thank you for coming along. And look, we'll just jump straight into it. I'm sure many people will have heard about you, or your name will be familiar to anyone in this industry. So how did you actually get into spearfishing? Oh, sorry, free diving.
Well, no, you were right there. Before I was a free diver, I was a spear fisherman. I still am. I guess my spear fishing journey started when I was quite young, but it also stopped there for quite a while as well. When I was growing up, I used to go out with my father spear fishing. And actually had a run-in with a tiger shark when I was about 9 years old. So that was a pretty scary experience, being in the water with such a large animal that I wasn't prepared for. Even though like everything ended well, there was no harm done, but I guess a little bit of mental scarring there. And I actually didn't snorkel or really spearfish for probably about another 12-13 years. So up until my mid-20s was the next time I actually got in the water again, spearfishing.
Wow.
After that, I started to gain a bit of confidence back, I fell in love with it again, and one thing kind of led to another, not so much spearfishing anymore, but more free diving is basically it's basically my life.
Okay. So, I mean, you've moved your life to a place where you can train a lot. I guess we'll talk about your training in a second. But look, maybe you can just explain what you found difficult when you were starting out. Free diving.
Yeah, so even I'll go back a little bit to when I started spearfishing, because you run into the same difficulties if you haven't taken a course or don't have anyone experienced to teach you. You're basically going to be learning off just friends and what you can find on the internet, and it might not be all the best information. So, for myself, I had a lot of difficulties with equalization. I can remember the first few times going spearfishing. I didn't know how to equalize. I'd go down to five meters or until my ears hurt, and then that was it. That was as far as I could go because I didn't know how to equalize my ears. So luckily, I had a friend show me just how to kind of the basic Valsalva maneuver, how to clear my ears, and then could go a little bit deeper. And then I kind of did my own sort of research on the internet, found out about there's this technique called Frenzel, and that's what you should be doing. So managed to get a little bit deeper after that, but it wasn't until I did my first free diving course back in 2016 and learned how to equalize properly that I really started to develop. And I went from being able to dive to kind of 15 meters down to 30 within, literally within 2 days. So I'd say,
wow,
that's probably one of the biggest hurdles for people starting out, some people are naturally gifted and they can equalize quite easily or even hands-free. For the majority of people, that's kind of your first hurdle is going to be being able to equalize your ears.
Wow. Okay. I you know, just as an outsider listening to this, what I take away from this is, you know, that phrase, a journey of 1,000 miles begins with a single step. So, I mean, it's inspiring because obviously you are, you know, you're now diving at sort of a world competition level. Is that you're sort of competing and in free diving, and yet you also had difficulties with equalizing when you started. So what a great development.
Yeah. I think I don't think the challenges with equalization ever really leave you. Like even now when, you know, I'm diving below 90 meters, trying to get consistently around 100 meter mark.
My God.
And equalization is still the limiting factor. Yeah. So,
really?
So it doesn't matter how your progression goes, it still seems to be one of the things that holds people back the most. I can name a handful of other top level professional freedivers who will all tell you the same thing.
Wow. Okay. So yeah, I mean, I guess my next question was, I was going to say common mistakes you see people making, but it could be, like you're just saying now, common problems that they face, like equalizing.
Yeah, yep. So definitely, like I'm a freediving instructor, so yeah, I see a lot of students, and equalization is generally the limiting factor. Most students who want to do a freediving course, generally they're already comfortable in the water. They've got, you know, some spearfishing, scuba, or even snorkeling background, so that's not too much of an issue. It's the relaxation and equalization, and both are incredibly important. They basically go hand in hand. If you're not relaxed in the water, you're going to find it incredibly difficult equalize your ears, and then on the other hand, if you can't equalize your ears, the deeper you go, the more stress you're going to get, and you're not going to be relaxed. So yeah, both are quite important for starting out.
So how, I mean, with the relaxation, I mean, what sort of stuff do you do, you know, for yourself or for students? What do you do to help them relax?
So to begin with, we generally teach a progressive relaxation technique called a body scan. So you're basically focusing on a body part, and mentally you're telling that body part to relax. So you say, okay, focus on your right arm and relax your right arm. Focus on your left arm, relax your left arm. And you basically move through each part of your body. You can start at your head, go all the way down to your toes, and by doing that for a minute or two, you should find that your breathing slows down and you become more relaxed. So that's basically the state you want to be in before you do a dive or a breath hold. It doesn't matter if it's a competitive dive or a spearfishing dive or laying on the couch holding your breath. You want to get your body and your mind as relaxed as possible, slow your heart rate down before you start that breath hold or that dive. And that's a really, really, really effective technique. It's something that I still even use today, and you'll see competitive divers still using something very, very similar.
Right. So, I mean, that to me, that just sounds exactly like what you do if you meditate or if you do yoga or something. I really enjoy those. I've always thought they would be really good for spearfishing and free diving. I mean, your thoughts on that?
Yeah. So yoga is a big part of what I do, of what most competitive free divers are doing. It doesn't have to be to the exact details of a yoga manual or anything like that, but the general principles of being flexible, that body-mind connection that you get when you're doing these slow stretching exercises. It's very important, and it transitions over to free diving quite well. So a big part of what I do, or important part of my training, is stretching and flexibility. So there's a lot of different yoga poses mixed in there. And most of those get done. I do a little bit of pre-dive stretching before I'll go and do a breath holding session or a deep dive session. You know, somewhere 15 minutes or 20 minutes is generally enough. But but I'll also do a good session every morning as soon as I wake up. So I wake up at 5 a.m. and I'll do, some days it'll be half an hour, other days it might be an hour and a half of stretching and breathing exercises to work on my flexibility.
Wow. Okay. Now that's just, I mean, that's really interesting because I've sort of sat on the podcast a few times and I was hoping I wasn't going to be contradicted by an expert. I'm just an amateur, but I've always thought yoga's fantastic, meditation's fantastic. So I'm glad exactly I wasn't lying. Okay.
That you're spot on.
Okay, well, look, maybe we can sort of go into, you know, what competitive free diving is and the different disciplines. And, you know, I just know that there's a bunch of different disciplines. I'm sure the leaders, maybe they're not even aware of that. Maybe you can just explain what the disciplines are, how it's done, you know, give us a lay of the land.
Yeah, sure. So competitive free diving is broken down into basically two areas. You've got pool free diving, and then you've got depth free diving. So pool free diving, we have four different disciplines. We have no fins, or what we call dynamic no fins. We have static, which is static breath hold, just staying on the surface, holding your breath for as long as you can. We then have dynamic, which is using a monofin. So if you haven't seen like one of the mermaid tails, but basically where you're swimming using a dolphin kick, and then we have dynamic bifins. So all these disciplines are all done in a pool. It's not about going deep. It's about how far you can swim, normally in a 50-meter pool, but also can be done in a 25-meter pool. So a lot of people train this because it's so accessible. You don't need depth to be able to train it. You just need like a buddy and a pool that will let you train. So as with any in-water breath holding, you want to make sure you've always got someone who's competent and able to assist you if something were to go wrong. There's always a few competitions in Australia each year, probably a handful, and then each year there is a world championships. The world championships is quite a big event. There's always people from all over the world that go there. Then on to the depth disciplines. So depth free diving, obviously to do this you need to have somewhere to train it. So for people in Australia, I'm guessing most of your listeners are probably local, so there's not too many places that offer the right conditions. You have to have ideally you want warm water, deep water with no current, and somewhere that's easily accessible, not somewhere you need to travel to like an hour offshore by boat. So we're quite limited in Australia with these sorts of sort of spots. That's why I moved over to Christmas Island to base myself here, so I can basically train depth year round if I want to. For competitive depth free diving, we've got four different disciplines. We have constant weight, so that's where we dive down using a monofin. We have constant weight bifins, diving down using bifins.
Sorry, we're carrying on now. We just had a technical glitch, but here we go again. Over to you, David.
Yeah, we're just running through the four different disciplines of depth free diving. So we have constant weight with a monofin, constant weight with a bifins. This one's my favorite discipline. I've actually previously held the Australian record in this discipline two separate occasions, at 86 meters and at 88 meters. I currently don't hold that one at the moment. I'll be hoping to try and get it back at my next competition or sometime in the near future. The other disciplines are free immersion, where you actually use the guide rope to pull yourself down with your arms and then pull yourself back up. So you're not using any fins at all on this one. And then the last one is constant weight, no fins. So you're basically doing a form of breaststroke, swimming down and back up. So most depth competitions, you will compete in one or all of the disciplines, if you like. Most are set up that you do one dive per day. You can't do any more than that. And I guess the basics of competition are that you're not just trying to dive as far as you can on that day. You actually need to announce to the organizer what depth you're going to try and reach. So you say, okay, I want to try and dive 60 meters with bifins today. That gets announced. The rope will get set down at 60, and down the bottom they have what we call a bottom plate and tags down there. So you actually have to dive down to your announced depth, take a tag, and then swim all the way back up. Once you get back to the surface, it doesn't mean that you've made it. There's actually a surface protocol that you have to complete to prove that you're not hypoxic and still in control of what you're doing. So once you break the surface, you need to remove any facial equipment. So if you've got a mask on or if you've got a nose clip, you need to take that off. You then need to make an okay sign with one of your hands. So have your index finger touching your thumb, make an okay sign, show the judge that's on the surface, and then you have to say the words, "I'm okay," all within 15 seconds. So if you don't do that, you'll get a red card, and it means you didn't complete the dive correctly. So the idea is to bring the tag back, complete the surface protocol, show the judge the tag that you brought back, do that all within the 15 seconds, and then you'll get a white card, and that means that you did successfully complete the dive.
Okay. Well, look, that's interesting because, it makes sense because I guess you could just massively overextend yourself, hit the surface with your tag and, die or pass out or something.
Yeah.
And, yeah, you're the world record, but you're dead.
exactly right. So, you still have to prove that you did the dive, successfully. It wasn't just a fluke or anything like that.
So, the one thing that stuck in my mind, which I'm sure it stuck in all the other listeners' minds, I just heard 88 meters and I just thought, oh my God, that's so deep. Do you ever actually see anything when you're down there? Like, or are you just so focused on that rope? The line you're diving on.
Yeah, so personally, I dive with a nose clip. So I don't have, a mask I can see through. So I'm not actually trying to look at anything. I'm just focusing on the rope, and it's basically, I guess I'd call what's going on down there is kind of like deep sea, like it's almost like a type of meditation. You're basically in the zone. You're not thinking about anything else. You don't need to see anything down there. You just follow the rope down. And your mind is basically programmed and knows what to do. It's basically free fall to the bottom, take the tag, and then swim back up. I've done a few dives deeper with a mask before, down to sort of like 60. And there's not too much to see down there. It's not like you're diving on a reef or anything like that. Mm. So competitive free diving, you won't find too many people wearing a normal mask.
I guess it's just air. You don't, it's volume and it's a thing on your face that you don't need.
Exactly right. The more air that you have, the more the further you'll be able to use that to equalize.
Okay. Well, look, maybe this is probably, we can sort of segue into how, you do your training and, like what's your training regimen like, your diet. I mean, what do you have to do to get to the level that you're at now?
I think the big thing is training consistency. So you need to you need to basically just be doing it for a long amount, for a decent amount of time. It's taken me, you know, a few years to get to this point. I think anyone can develop quite quickly. You'll find if you wanted to, if you trained, you know, 3 days a week doing pull training, some equalization exercises, you can probably dive to 40 or 50 meters within a couple of months. To go beyond that, you really need to put in the time somewhere where you can consistently dive. So I think, losing track here a little bit, maybe I'll go back to diet. So sure. Diet for freediving or myself. Just eat, the main thing is just eat healthy. Like I don't eat any processed foods. You won't find me eating too many, you know, like chips, chocolate or hamburgers or McDonald's or anything like that. I try to eat as much fish that I catch myself as I can. Fish, rice, good carbs, and lots of veggies. There are some supplements out there that can definitely assist with recovery. Anything with antioxidants in it is quite good. You can get them from natural sources such as like cacao or dark chocolate is quite a good one. Blueberries. Yeah, there's like if you do a little bit of research online, you'll find there's plenty out there. As far as like supplements go, magnesium, zinc, like a general multivitamin is quite good because breath holding and freediving is quite taxing on your body. So you do need to make sure that you're eating well or maintaining good hydration, not just when you're diving or training, but throughout the day as well. That'll make a big difference. What else is there on that?
I was going to ask on, sorry, on just one question on that. I think we're in Australia and most people enjoy a beer or something in the evenings. I've always found that just the worst thing. I mean, so I don't actually drink now, but where do you stand on that? How does that affect?
Yeah, I like it. Back in another life, I used to drink a lot. I don't drink barely anything anymore. Like with training, particularly from training for a competition, I won't touch alcohol for months. After I know the competition or my training cycle is done, yes, I'll enjoy a couple of beers on the night, but that's about it. Yeah, I think alcohol definitely affects people in different ways in regards to how it affects their body when they're training. I remember you saying how it can affect you and you tend to build up a bit more mucus, so you find it harder to equalize. I've heard that through a few people having that issue. Definitely the night before a dive or a spearfishing session, I definitely would not be having any beers.
Okay. No, that's great. Sorry, and I totally interrupted your train of thought. So we were talking about the nutrition.
No, that's okay.
We're talking about nutrition totally and where did we go from there? On to your training.
Yeah, so just on nutrition and training, a big part of training is also how you recover after that training. So recovery is incredibly important for freediving. If you train hard, you also need to recover hard and give your body time to rest. So a lot of people in other sports, it's like, okay, it's train. In freediving, you need to make sure that you're giving yourself like full days of rest off in between your training. So your body can recover because, as I said before, it's incredibly taxing on your body, so you need to make sure that you also allow time to recover. So if I do, you know, 2 or 3 days of training in a row, I'll take like a complete day off where all I'm doing is a little bit of light stretching.
Right.
Different forms of training. A big part of what I did when I was starting out was dry training, because that's the only kind of training I had access to. I used to work as a FIFO electrician for many years. So going out to mine sites, and there's definitely no ocean or no pool out there. So basically you've only got, you may have a gym, but that's about it. So initially the way I started training was doing dry CO2 tables, which I know you've talked a little bit about in one of your earlier episodes. They are incredibly effective for someone who starting out and just wanting to kind of dip their feet in breath hold training. They're not too strenuous. It's not too hard to follow along. There's plenty of mobile apps out there that you can download that will run you through exactly what you need to do. So that's basically how I started. I basically did those for 6 months, and I built my static breath hold up from 2:30 to I think it was almost 7 minutes. With consistent training.
That is so long. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, so, I think everyone listening to this is probably thinking, oh my God, but okay, carry on.
Yeah, so it's not it's not too uncommon to see that kind of progression. If you're doing consistent training, say 3-4 days a week, and giving yourself those days off in between to make sure that you recover, I think to get to 5 minutes isn't beyond the average Spiro, as long as you're consistent with your training. To reach those higher levels, you it takes a little bit more commitment and I guess mental strength as well, but it also helps if you have a coach or you have someone to help guide you. Me, I was doing, like, I was spending hours online researching old free diving forums and all these different places to try and find tips and tricks. Now there's guys out there who are, I guess, like professional static coaches. And that'll definitely fast track your progression if you do want to get into those higher sort of 6-7 plus minute mark breath holds. But I think for the average Spiro, if you do want to put in a few months training yourself, just using an app, I think you 5 minutes is not beyond you.
Yeah, well, I think that's really encouraging, for everyone, listening, who sort of think, oh my God, it's all difficult and impossible. Well, no, I mean, if you put the time in, you can do it.
It just comes down to consistent training. I think the challenges that people find is just trying to slot it into their everyday life. You need to just come up with a dedicated time and hit that same time every day and turn it into a habit. So myself, I'd always do my breath hold training after work. So I'd do my normal shift, come home from work and spend the half an hour or 45 minutes or whatever it took to do the session then and there. And then that became a habit. And then, you're not so much, forcing yourself to do something. It just becomes a little more of an automatic thing to do.
Look, for me, it's very interesting hearing the language you're using here. Like, you're really emphasizing consistency with training and making it a habit. And I've always sort of thought the same thing, that it's about, just with exercise, if you're going to just do a walk every day, that's better than doing one big gym session once a month. Stick to, and just stick to it consistently. Yep. That'll work.
Yeah, exactly right. So from the static breath hold stuff, I mean, it's good and it's a good way to start. But for people who are particularly Spiros, you're not really doing a static breath hold when you spear. You're moving, you're kicking, you're moving your muscles. So you need to basically train that. So once I worked out, okay, yeah, I had a good static breath hold, but it wasn't actually helping my spear fishing. I was like, okay, what do I do now? And then I found out about dynamic apnea. So, you know, swim in the pool, but also a little bit of riding apnea. So riding on a bike, obviously you're not trying to push yourself when you're doing this. And this is on a stationary bike. So in the gym, you're just trying to build CO2. You're not trying to push yourself to the end of a breath hold. So you're using oxygen, you know, creating a lot of CO2, but you're moving your legs, which is what you do when you kick with fins. So that was quite an effective way to train. If you don't have a bike, you can also walk. So that's probably the training that's most accessible to everyone, is simply doing a CO2 table, but do it while you walk.
It's an added plus. I was going to ask you about this. You know, years and years ago, I got one of those little breathing resistance trainers. You know, it's sort of like a snorkel mouthpiece and a little thing that you can screw in and screw out. And I just would put that on the lighter setting and then either do a walk or a really, really, really pathetically slow jog. And I found that really helpful. Is that a suitable training, or was I doing something silly?
No. Like any time where you're putting your body or your breath under a bit of stress like that is going to be helpful. I think if you really wanted to make some good progress though, doing breath holds while you walk is going to be just a little more beneficial, because it's basically what you're going to be doing once you're in the water, really. Like you take a breath, you hold your breath, and you start diving and you kick. So what you can do is basically while you walk is visualize it as if it was a dive. So, you know, pretend you're kicking down to 20 meters deep. And you can even do like a little static pause there as if you're laying on the bottom and visualize yourself as if you're hunting. And then when you're ready, you kick, or you're basically walking back to the surface. So it's a way to make it a little bit more lifelike. It's not just a walk and hold your breath exercise.
Yeah. Okay. Now, look, I've got to say, Zoom is giving me the notice saying the recording is going to end very shortly. But is there any sort of last minute thoughts we can share with you'd like to share with the listeners?
Like I think like a big part of what I do in instructing is teaching people free diving safety. So just make sure that when you're out there, you're always doing the right thing. You know how to weight yourself correctly. You're not overweighted when you dive. And your breathing before you dive is slower and relaxed. You're not taking these big, deep breaths or hyperventilating before you dive. By taking a free diving course, you'll learn all the correct techniques of what to do, and that'll give you a lot of confidence when you go in the water as well. So, don't underestimate the skills that you'll learn there.
Okay. Well, brilliant. Well, look, just because the recording's about to end, I think let's say thank you very much, David. And, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. I'm sure the listeners are going to get so much out of this. And I will stop the recording there.